You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
In late October, at a rally in Colorado, Donald Trump held in his little greasy Cheeto-colored fingers a rainbow flag. Someone in the crowd was holding up a rainbow flag, and they passed it up to the stage. And scrawled on this rainbow flag of course being the flag of the LGBT community, were the words LGBT for Trump. And Donald Trump held that flag up, and people took his pictures, and they went places, those pictures. A writer in the Washington Times, which is a conservative paper owned by the rabidly anti-gay Unification Church, a right-wing rag of a paper, described this event, Donald Trump holding a rainbow flag in his hands and that rainbow flag not bursting to flames, as an historic moment for gay equality. No other Republican nominee in history has embraced the LGBT community in such a loud and proud way, wrote Richard Grenell. A gay man and an asshole and a former official in the administration of George W. Bush, of course, who was a man who brutally exploited anti-gay prejudice to secure a second term in office by running anti-same-sex marriage initiatives in 11 states to turn out the right-wing, knuckle-dragging, fundamentalist Christian asshole anti-gay vote. Grenell, who is now so concerned with LGBT equality, worked for George W. Bush, something to bear in mind. This moment, Donald Trump touching a rainbow flag with his greasy orange fingers in front of a crowd, was pointed to by some of the brain-dead, self-lobotomized queer idiots who supported Trump, a handful of gay men, as evidence that this was our guy, that he was pro-gay, and we needed to trust Donald Trump. And somebody even founded an organization called LGB Trump, which, when you saw the logo, looked like LGBT Rump. Because, of course, the really good gay graphic artists were going to have nothing to do with this organization, so they shat the bed. Before he won the election, if you wanted any evidence of who Donald Trump was going to be after he won the election, Donald Trump selected Indiana Governor Mike Pence as his running mate. Pence, while he was governor of Indiana, signed a bill legalizing anti-gay discrimination in his state and advocated spending money meant for HIV prevention on ex-gay conversion therapies, including electroshock therapy. Better to electrocute the gay out of you than spend 5 cents of taxpayers' dollars educating you about sexual safety. And since winning the election, all of Trump's appointees have been anti-LGBT. Trump's pick for Secretary of Defense, James Mattis, opposes letting gays, lesbians, and bisexuals serve openly in the military, wants to return us to the days of anti-queer witch hunts. Senator Jeff Sessions, Trump's pick for Attorney General, isn't just a racist piece of shit. He's also an anti-LGBT piece of shit with a zero rating from the Human Rights Campaign. Tom Price, Trump's pick for Health and Human Services, isn't just a rabid anti-Obamacare opponent. He is also an anti-LGBT bigot who wants a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage and who voted against hate crimes laws meant to protect the LGBT community. The list goes on and on. Every single one of Trump's picks has rejected the LGBT community and our rights and our lives and our families in a, to quote Richard Grenell, loud and proud way. One more example. The man on top of Trump's list for potential Supreme Court nominees, William Pryor, thinks gay sex should be a crime, thinks it should be a felony, thinks people who have homosexual sex should be thrown into prison where the homosexual sex stops. Another fun fact about William Pryor, there are nude photos believed to be of him taken while he was in college for a porn magazine circulating online. Pryor denies that these pictures are of him, but he would, wouldn't he? Just Google William Pryor gay porn, look at the pictures, judge for yourself. And last week, NBC News reported that one of the Trump administration's first legislative priorities is going to be something they're calling the First Amendment Defense Act, or the FADA, or FADA. FADA, reports NBC News, would prohibit the federal government from taking discriminatory action against any business or person that discriminates against LGBTQ people. The act aims to protect the rights of all entities to refuse service to LGBT people based on two sets of beliefs. Marriage is or should be recognized as the union of one man and one woman, and sexual relations are properly reserved to such a marriage. FADA would do for the entire country what the Republicans in North Carolina did for the LGBT community in North Carolina. Legalize anti-LGBT discrimination. And an Orwellian turn of the knife, FATA would prevent the federal government from discriminating against people who discriminate against people who happen to be LGBT. Jennifer Pizer, law and policy director at Lambda Legal, told NBC that this law, quote, invites devastating discrimination against LGBT people. She also said that FATA is crazy unconstitutional. Here's Pizer. This proposed new law violates both equal protection and the Establishment Clause by elevating one set of religious beliefs above all others and by targeting LGBT Americans as a group contrary to settled constitutional law. So, Richard Grenell and a handful of other cocksucking apologists for Trump the candidate, and now Trump the president-elect. We are at an historic moment for gay equality, a moment when the incoming brand new, shiny orange Republican administration is going to attack gay equality. We are, as I said, the night Trump won the election, we are going to have to lawyer the fuck up. I know everyone's been making donations here and there to the ACLU, to Planned Parenthood, to immigrants' rights groups. You might want to throw a few bucks Lambda Legal's way as well. LambdaLegal.org might want to throw a few bucks their way as well, because we are going to, as the ACLU said to Donald Trump the night he won the election, we are going to see you in court, motherfuckers. Because LGBT people, we aren't just out and proud, we are out and proud, and we are lawyered the fuck up. Speaking of out and proud, ain't nobody outer or prouder than Randy Rainbow, who joins us today on the podcast, along with Gabriel Moss, and tons of you guys with tons of your questions all coming up on today's show. This episode is brought to you by Squatty Potty, the toilet stool that facilitates faster, easier, and more complete shitting. I am not kidding. Go to SquattyPotty.com right now and use offer code SAVAGE to save 25% off your entire order plus free shipping. That's SquattyPotty.com, offer code SAVAGE. Today's Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Me Undies. High quality, super comfortable, good looking undies. Get 20% off your first order when you go to MeUndies.com/Savage.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code SAVAGE at checkout to get 10% off. That's squarespace.com, offer code SAVAGE.
I guess my issue is I'm involved with a really amazing woman who actually enjoys wanting to give me head. However, she's not really good at it. I've had really great head, which has kind of, impacted my, the grading score I got. I mean, there's a certain sensitivity. Anyway, the other aspect of the thing is that I was molested as a kid. So when I'm, and she doesn't take feedback really well, but she does know about my past. And in my head, when I trying to think of ways to correct her, I hear my father correcting me, because that was what happened to me when I was between 6 and 8. So it just fucks up in my head. So I don't know how to give her proper guidance in that area or and make me not creep out.
First, of course, I want to say I'm so sorry for what was done to you, and I want to congratulate you for how thoroughly processed it seems to be, that you've arrived at a place where you can acknowledge this, and you know where your triggers are. You know, if you go here to this certain place and engage in this kind of a conversation about that kind of an act, that that's going to be upsetting for you, and you want to know how to work your way around it. Seems to me that email is your friend. If offering a critique verbally is something that's going to throw you back into those moments when you were raped by the person who should have been protecting you from the kinds of people who might rape children, then don't do it verbally. Don't do it out loud. Write it out. Do it in an email. You say that she is aware of the abuse that you suffered and that she is understanding and compassionate about it. And if she is indeed understanding and compassionate about what you suffered and the lasting impact and the damage that you still live with that was inflicted upon you, she should be able to accept this workaround and be gracious and kind and understanding and compassionate about it. But this is the sort of feedback that you need to give via email as opposed to in conversation. That said, maybe this isn't an area where any feedback from you is going to result in any improvement on her side. Some people are just bad at some things and better at others. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. It may be possible that your girlfriend cannot change her blowjob style. That might work for other men. May not be that she's bad at it. Maybe she's great at it for other guys, but her technique, her style doesn't work for you. And you might just have to live with the blowjobs as they come from her, and you might have to focus on the things that do work, the stuff where you guys do click, and not obsess about something that you may not be able to change, feedback or no feedback. Again, I am so sorry for the hand that was dealt you, for what was done to you, for the way that you were violated, and I'm glad to hear that you're in a place where you can live with this, have a decent and fun and fulfilling sex life while conscious of the workarounds that you need to protect your mental health.
Hi, Dan. This is a 25-year-old female calling from the Rust Belt. The reason that I'm calling is because I have a question about disclosing to friends when they may be dating somebody who has been problematic with you in the past. So a little bit of backstory. In the beginning of 2015, I started having a friends with benefits arrangement with somebody who I've known for about 10 years. We know each other since we were teenagers. He went to a different college than I did. He's also several years older than me. But anyways, he moved back to my city earlier, well, towards the end of last year. So earlier this year, whenever we began this arrangement, we were having sex pretty regularly, and everything was going really well at first. We were having a lot of fun, and we were engaging in things that were a little bit new to me, some BDSM type of behaviors. But he crossed a boundary a few months in, and he actually is into a lot more sexually extreme things than I am. And he got a nosebleed while we were having sex, and he was on top of me. And it was dark, so I didn't notice at first. And I saw him look down at his hand, and he saw the blood, and he put his hand into my mouth before I had the chance to realize what it was and wiped it in my mouth. And I had a reaction, like, what was that? And he was like, oh, my nose is bleeding. And so I immediately pushed him off of me. I gagged, and I was very upset. Long story short, his response was really problematic. He got very disengaged and kind of went out of my house in a little bit of a huff, and then texted me afterwards and was like, I really wish you would have talked to me about this, and had this just really shitty response. And I called him out for not engaging any type of conversation about consent when it had to do with him putting his hand in my mouth when it was covered in blood without me knowing. So I laid into him. I told him that he was completely wrong, that he should have engaged my consent had he asked, that he would know that that's not something that I'm interested in doing. And in fact, that was traumatizing to me. So I ceased my friendship with him. His reaction later on was very apologetic. However, in the moment, he said a lot of problematic things. Fast forward to now, he has begun seeing one of my friends. I do see him out around occasionally, but she's a pretty good friend of mine who I see maybe about once or twice a month. We do hang out by ourselves occasionally. And I just wonder if it's my duty to tell her what happened between us. I know what your advice typically is for other things in this regard, as far as like if you find out somebody's cheating, should you tell, not tell. But this is something I feel a little bit conflicted about. So I just wanted to know if you had any guidance. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, if you see somebody's husband on Tinder, my advice in the past has been to keep your fucking mouth shut, because you don't know what's going on in their marriage. You don't know whether they have an open relationship or not. You don't know if they're in a particularly difficult time right now, and maybe they're both cheating on each other, or maybe he's cheating because he has grounds and cause, or she's cheating because she has grounds and cause. And the affair that they might have right now may not destroy the relationship, and they may patch it up and be together forever if you keep your fucking mouth shut. If they know that they were being cheated on, they might not patch it up and be together forever. So yeah, err on the side, keeping your mouth shut when it comes to the example that you cite. You know, you're somebody's husband is having an affair, or somebody's wife is having an affair. Do you say something? Generally, no. This is not that case. This is a dude into BDSM who pulled a really non-consensual, fucked up, fluid exchangey move on you in the dark, and then was a dick about it when you had the temerity to confront him about the lack of consent for this kind of act. It is important in BDSM land for the subs of the world and the doms of the world to communicate with each other, for there to be accountability around people's performance when it comes to this kind of play. There is a kind of undertow that subs experience where they don't want to queer that moment. They don't want to ruin it by objecting to what the dom wanted to do, because isn't that what it's supposed to be about? The dom is like doing their thing and you're submitting to the dom's will. And of course, that's not what's going on. Everything is negotiated. Everything is consented to in advance. And this dude proved himself in that moment to be a really shitty, selfish dom. And your friend who's thinking about getting involved with him, she needs to know that. She is getting involved with someone who, in the past at least, didn't respect your consent and didn't have the sense to anticipate that this move that he was about to pull was not something he could just do. It was something that needed to be discussed in advance. So you should definitely say something, because this kind of accountability is what makes BDSM and the kink scene safer for people who are engaging in this kind of varsity level sex play. Underwear. It's the first thing you put on in the morning and the last thing you take off at night. Or if you're lucky, it's the last thing your partner takes off for you at night. And why would you want to settle for anything less than the best feeling underwear on the planet? MeUndies focuses exclusively on producing the most comfortable underwear you've ever experienced. My friends at MeUndies sent me a few pairs a while back, and now I can't imagine wearing anything else, and I've ordered myself a few more pairs on my own dime. For the price of two cocktails, MeUndies will deliver your new favorite pair of underwear right to your doorstep. Try them on, and if they aren't the most comfortable, best-feeling underpants you have ever had, they will refund you and let you keep that first pair for free. MeUndies are made with Modal, a special fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. These uber cozy undies are sold exclusively on the MeUndies website, where you'll enjoy free shipping in the U.S. and Canada. And for a limited time, everyone in my audience gets 20% off their first order, but you have to go to our special URL, MeUndies.com/savage. With the MeUndies Better Day Guarantee, you have nothing to lose, so don't wait any longer. You are listening to a sex podcast. Sex is important to you. And underpants, underwear, they are important to sex. People are often sexier in their underwear with something on than they are out of their underwear. You know it's true, and you want to wear underwear that makes you feel sexy, and MeUndies can do that. Go to MeUndies.com/savage right now for 20% off your first order. That's MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, I'm a female in my early 20s, and I've been dating my boyfriend long distance for almost 6 years. He's the first man I've ever been in a serious sexual relationship with. We see each other monthly, usually. We've been totally monogamous for the entirety of our relationship, and we recently decided to enter into an open relationship because I simply found my needs just not being met on a daily basis, and it got to the point where I was so horny that I asked for his consent for me to sleep with a male friend with who I became very close with and was attracted to. This has been going on for a couple of months now, and my boyfriend only this past week started to experiment with other girls. We're hoping that being in an open relationship will help him be honest about his needs and let go of the idea that two people need to meet each other's each and every need 100% of the time. He's had a hard time letting go of this concept, but I believe that we're moving forward in the right direction. I'm struggling with my feelings, though. I've fallen in love with my second partner, and the time we spend together is so incredibly passionate. Meanwhile, my feelings for my boyfriend have changed a bit. I feel that our honeymoon phase, which seemed to have lasted forever because of the distance, has finally come to an end, and we've started that true long-term relationship thing. So I'm really confused. I'm experiencing this new, passionate relationship while also trying to maintain and protect this older, deep-seated relationship. Obviously, the love I have for my two partners is very different, but I will admit that I'm way more interested in sex with my new partner than I am with my boyfriend at the moment. So does it sound like I'm just making excuses to justify my waning interest in my old relationship and avoid breaking up? Can I truly be loving two people at once? And should I stop trying to compare apples to oranges? How much of this dwindling interest sounds like a normal side effect of a long-term relationship? Should we just end it? Should we try to rekindle that old flame? I don't know which end is up. Please help.
The poly people have an expression for part of what you're feeling right now. NRE, an acronym, new relationship energy. Your new partner is your new partner. They're shiny and new and novel and different and exciting. And everything that sex was with your boyfriend, however many years ago it was that you first met, sex is that now with your new partner. NRE, new relationship energy. It can be very intoxicating. It can also be very confusing. Some people who've never been in an open relationship before, never been in a polyamorous relationship before, will experience NRE and read it as a sign that they're not in love with their primary partner or their long-term partner anymore. They're not in the same kind of intense, passionate love. And then they will leave their primary partner for their new partner. And eventually the NRE wears off and their new partner becomes their old partner. And then they experience NRE with their next partner. So you have to be really careful about reading too much into that new relationship energy. But paradoxically, sometimes people read too little into NRE. It could be that you're transitioning out of this relationship. And not only is your new boyfriend shiny and new, your new boyfriend is there. Your old boyfriend is a long-distance relationship. Your new boyfriend is present and available to you physically, sexually, perhaps even emotionally in ways that your old boyfriend is not. And it's going to be difficult for your old boyfriend to compete for your attention and your affections under those kinds of circumstances. That said, sometimes relationships end. Poly doesn't mean, or open doesn't mean, that a long-term, long-time going thing can't run its course. Sometimes you see people in poly relationships who don't end a relationship that probably should end because they don't have to end the relationship to be in a new relationship. So you see these kind of zombie relationships staggering on long past their expiration dates, because the question never has to be called. The funeral never has to be held. The body never has to be declared dead, because you don't have to get out of the relationship to have a new relationship or concurrent relationship. So you have to judge your existing long-term relationship on its own merits, irrespective of your feelings for your new partner. I promise you that shiny and new, breathless excitement feeling, that's going to go away. That always, over time, goes away. And hopefully something else rises in its place. A new and different kind of transformative, transfixing intimacy that is itself rewarding in its own way and profound in its own way and different than the NRE that is unsustainable over the years rises to compensate. But if it doesn't rise to compensate, if that's not there in your old relationship, maybe your old relationship is a relationship that needs to end. Hard to say, though. You're in the best position to judge. I'm not telling you to dump your old boyfriend. I'm telling you to look at these as two separate and distinct relationships. The new guy, totally exciting, new relationship energy, have fun. Your old boyfriend, maybe you can get it back. Maybe that thing that was rising to replace the NRE that waned over time is just about to come around the corner. And so it might be too soon to declare it dead or end it with your old boyfriend. But if that thing doesn't come along, if that degree of intimacy and connection that compensates for the waning of NRE doesn't emerge, you might need to have a conversation with your old boyfriend about whether you guys need to part now as friends rather than zombieing it out for too much longer. Want to know the best gift to give this holiday season? Well, nothing says I love you more than the gift of a complete elimination. Nothing says I love you quite like completely empty bowels. And the best way to achieve this is by experiencing the benefits of a healthy toilet posture with the original Squatty Potty toilet stool. With Squatty Potty, you will enjoy faster, easier, and more complete shitting. Squatty Potty helps anyone who might suffer from constipation, hemorrhoids, or too much straining on the toilet when you're trying to take a dump. Squatting in the position the Squatty Potty helps you achieve opens the colon and gives waste a straight shot at exiting the body. A complete elimination is very important to overall general health and other things we sometimes talk about on this show, and Squatty Potty can get you there. It has thousands of five-star reviews on Amazon, and the New York Post says Squatty Potty is the best chunk of plastic $25 can buy. Squatty Potty is available nationwide at Bed Bath & Beyond and Target and Costco stores, and you can go to squattypotty.com, use code SAVAGE, and save 25% off your entire order. This is the best deal out there, so don't use any other coupon codes. Go to squattypotty.com, use code SAVAGE, and save 25% and receive free shipping. That's squattypotty.com. We're going to take a quick break from the calls to remind you, as if you needed reminding, that 2016 really fucking sucked. This was a terrible year, and we are almost out of this year, almost done with this year. This sucky year is almost gone. Think about it. Prince, Bowie, the election, so many bad things went down this year. But one of the silver linings, one of the bright spots in the year was the emergence of the parody song comedy artist Randy Rainbow, who treated us to a series of fucking hilarious songs and comedy bits and skits on YouTube, where he has now millions and millions of views, mocking Republican presidential hopefuls during the primary and Donald Trump during the general election. Here's a little taste of Randy's work, something he released after one of the presidential debates.
That is not in a braggadocious way. It's because...
Braggadocious? Is that even a word?
I don't know. Maybe. Who knows?
He's super callous, fragile, egocentric, braggadocious. Likes to throw big words around and hopes that we all notice. If he keeps repeating them, they might just make him POTUS. Super careless, fragile, ego, extra braggadocious. Are you really gonna vote for this guy? You're really gonna vote for this guy? Are you really gonna vote for this guy? Are you really gonna vote for this guy?
So joining me by phone, Randy Rainbow, comedian and viral internet sensation responsible for that terrific parody song send-up of the last presidential debate. His election videos have garnered close to 100 million views on YouTube, and I have such admiration for your giant talent. Randy, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh my God, thank you so much. I'm such a fan of yours too, so I'm happy to talk to you.
They really voted for the guy, Randy.
I can't fucking deal with this.
I can't either. Thank you for saying that, because you've generated some more videos and more comedy and parody videos in the wake of this asshole's election, and your sense of humor seems to be intact and mine is not. Please help me.
Listen, behind the scenes, I'm breaking as well. My only thing getting me through is that, you know, while this is terrible for our country, it's fabulous for my career. So let's think about that. I don't know why more people aren't talking about that.
You first came to my attention with your series GOP Dropout, which was a parody of Beauty School Dropout from Greece, where each time one of the 4,000 Republicans in the GOP primary dropped out, you did a GOP Dropout number. We're going to play a little clip of one of them right now.
GOP Dropout. Looks like you're not the nominee. GOP Dropout. You ate your boogers on TV. Well, you fought for all those delegates, but looks like Donald got them. So I guess if Donald Trump's the top, then that makes you the bottom. I always figured GOP Dropout.
GOP Dropout.
Maybe I'll miss your double speak.
GOP Dropout.
GOP Dropout. Your Christian values were on fleek.
Yeah.
But you messed with the New Yorkers, so I guess you're out of luck. As the New Yorkers say, F*** you, you f***ing go Mets or whatever.
Randy, I was so looking forward to the final GOP Dropout coming when Donald Trump lost the election. Did you have that one in the can? Had you written that one?
I didn't, because technically he wouldn't have been a dropout. He would have lost. So I didn't know that it really, I don't know. I mean, do you think that, I guess like I could have done one, but I didn't.
You could have done GOP Washout.
I could have done that. Yeah. No, I didn't have that. As you may have seen, I actually had so much faith in Hillary that I made her a video celebrating her victory like 2 weeks before the election.
So it was your fault. You jinxed it.
I did. I did a Kinahara on Hillary Clinton.
So,
and now we're all fucked.
So who are you, and how did you get to be so fucking funny, and how do you make these brilliant videos? I'm just so in such admiration of your talent, but I don't really know anything about your background. Where the fuck did you come from? You just sort of burst out this year with these GOP Dropout videos and these amazing parodies.
Overnight sensation after 6 years is how it usually happens.
Right.
But I've been around. I have my background is musical theater. Surprise, surprise. And I kind of was writing a little bit in New York and just kind of floating around and making a name for myself a little bit. And I started with these videos probably, when did Mel Gibson's tapes leak? Was that like 6 years ago with his voicemails?
Oh, longer than that, I think.
To his ex-wife. It was like 6 or 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I started doing this format where I would like, my first viral video was Randy Rainbow is dating Mel Gibson. And I did a series of videos of me like walking around my apartment, having romantic conversations with Mel Gibson's horrible, racist, homophobic, rant to his wife,
mm-hmm.
anti-Semitic, all the good stuff. So that was kind of like my first taste of viral success. And then I kind of had this slow and steady kind of rise. I've been doing a couple web series on BroadwayWorld.com and stuff like that. So I've been around mm-hmm. doing this. And then with the election, it just kind of took it to a new level.
It's amazing stuff, and it's so good. And people need to find your YouTube channel and watch all of your videos. If you missed GOP Dropout, go find them. They are terrific. And you've been doing now parodies that are really helping us process and work through and maintain our sense of humor as the Trump administration hurtles toward us.
I'm so glad. When I started doing them, it was all just sort of fun. And I come at it from a comedic standpoint. And it's a really nice surprise to hear, although it's not surprising that comedy helps people, but the amount of email and stuff that I get from people saying just how much they're being helped by these and how much it's sort of, you know, calming their nerves in such chaotic times. That's a really nice thing. So I feel like I have more of a purpose than just being campy and silly.
But you do camp and you do silly better than just about anybody else online right now. And where can people see you perform live? Because you do your shows live too in New York.
I do. And I'm working on something that I can tour all around the country and world. So that, you know, check my website for upcoming tour dates and stuff. But I'll be in New York at Birdland. I'm playing Birdland for the second time on January 3rd.
People, go see Randy Rainbow live. I haven't seen you live yet myself, but I imagine it is 10,000 times
to.
As much fun. I want to, but I live in Seattle. Come to
I'm
Seattle
amazing.
So I can see you live.
I would love to. I will definitely be there, and I'm staying with you.
We have a guest room. You're welcome to it. Before we let you go, we just like sometimes to throw a Savage Love Sex Advice question at people when we have them on the phone. Because sex advice, any idiot can give it, because I do. And if I can, you can.
No, I haven't had sex in like 4 months. Is that going to hinder this process at all?
No, that's not disqualifying.
Okay, cool.
The Pope gives sex advice. When's the last time that bitch got laid?
Exactly. Well, I don't know.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 22-year-old black bisexual woman, and I'm having a steamy love affair with a white man who's 30 years older than me. The sex is great, and I couldn't ask for more in a partner. There's just one problem. I love it when my lover slams me from behind, but my enjoyment is often tempered because I feel like I might fart, which makes me try to hold it in, which only makes it worse. Doggy style is my second favorite position, and I don't want to give it up. He says he doesn't mind, but it makes me feel like I'm not the true sexual fairy that I am. Help, Dan. What can I do? Do I need a butt plug? I'll do anything except fart.
So, Randy, your advice for her.
This is all on me.
Yep.
This is a lot.
Yeah, I handle every other call on today's show. This one is all you.
Thank you so much for giving me the fart woman. I really have no words of wisdom because this is my whole fear of life is farting in front of a significant other. That's why I've been single for like 10 years. I don't know, a butt plug, Dan, is that like, what? How would you even incorporate a butt plug to during that?
Well,
a time like that.
The problem with incorporating a butt plug is you'd have to incorporate a large one because you can literally shoot a narrow butt plug out of your ass and across the room. So
who are you telling? I know that.
Well, I'm telling the caller that, I guess. You and I both know that a butt plug can go flying out of an ass. So it's not like a cork, and it's not, not going to protect you necessarily, unless it's wide enough that the largest buildup of gas could not displace it. So caller, if you can endure a giant butt plug, maybe that would work. Or you could just disinhibit a little bit and go ahead and fart on him if you have to.
That never ends well, Dan. he's not going to put up with that. And if he says he's going to, he's lying. And don't expect a call the next day. That's what I say. I'm sorry. And diet. I mean, diet is a big factor in this, don't you think?
Maybe. Have you ever heard of the pregnancy anti-gas position?
No. Yes, I'm in it right now. No, what is it?
Well, it's something they advise pregnant women to do who are experiencing uncomfortable gas. And it's to get on your knees, but put your elbows on the floor and sort of rest your head on the floor with your butt up in the air and then fart away. And perhaps the caller could assume the pregnancy anti-gas position alone in a room for a little while before the sex so that she can fart it all out and feel confident that there's nothing left to fart out.
That's great advice. I'm going to do that after I hang up with you, in fact.
Farts happen, though. Randy, I'm in a long-term committed relationship. My husband farts in front of me. I fart in front of him. You have to get there if you want to be in an LTR.
I guess you do, but I'm very – I can't get there. It's going to take me a while to get there.
Terry helped me get there. But he's a farter. I'm not. I hadn't farted in front of another human being ever until Terry came.
I love it. It's one of my favorite things to do, but it's like, you know, how am I – I have to find a partner who's willing to – you know, put up with my hobbies, and one of them is farting. I love doing it. I'm glad we can end on farting. Thank you. And come see me at Birdland.
I will come see you at Birdland if I can get to New York at the beginning of the year. Anybody out there listening, get to New York at the beginning of the year. Go see Randy Rainbow at Birdland in New York City on January 3rd. And go to your website, which is
randyrainbow.com or Randy Rainbow Official on Facebook.
And find out about upcoming shows and watch his videos and make him rich. You're going to be one of the YouTube mega rich, right?
Let's hope I'm on my way. Yes. Yes.
Yes, you will be. Randy Rainbow, he is a fucking genius. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Dan, thank you so much.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. They make it simple and intuitive to create your website, blog, or online store. Squarespace is ideal for small business owners. From nationally recognized brands to your favorite local shops, Squarespace is trusted by hundreds of thousands of savvy shop owners around the world, including all the tools you need to track inventory, process orders, and send custom emails in one intuitive interface. Squarespace Commerce allows you to understand every aspect of your business, and they make adding a domain to your site simple. If you sign up for a year, you'll receive a custom domain for free. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter offer code SAVAGE to get 10% off your first purchase. That's squarespace.com, offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 26-year-old gay man living out on the East Coast, and I've been single for the past 2 years or so. I've only had one serious relationship in the past, and I've spent a lot of time since that relationship ended trying to embrace being single and not worrying so much about whether or not I have a boyfriend or not. But that's really hard. I've had a really hard time trying to not feel like my life is somehow lacking without a partner. And this is also coupled with my struggle with depression and anxiety. Luckily, for the past 9 months, I've been in therapy, and I've recently started medication to try to address some of those issues that the depression and anxiety cause. And I'm really grateful for the progress that I've made in that regard. But it's really hard for me not to feel like still somehow my life would be way better if I had a boyfriend and eventually a husband. So I think I have a bit of a two-part question for you. First, how do I not romanticize the idea of having a relationship? I think oftentimes I'm looking for a sort of Superman or person to save me from my singlehood. And I know that that's not a healthy way to approach it, but I can't seem to get that idea of the perfect person or guy out of my head. So any tips on that would be great. And second, I am curious, how do I just embrace my single life more fully? How do I take advantage of all the opportunities that being single affords me instead of looking at it as something that I don't have or something that I'm lacking?
So you're asking me how to avoid romanticizing romance? Kind of a problem, kind of a conundrum. You're only 26 years old. You are in the process right now of getting your shit together. Congratulations and good for you. And you're doing the work. You're getting yourself into good working order so that when you meet somebody, they will regard you as someone in good working order who might be a good and decent partner for the long term. But don't rush it and enjoy what you've got now. And what you have right now is your independence, your autonomy, your freedom. Get out there, do shit, go places, volunteer, pursue career opportunities, travel, be out there moving through the world, not to find a partner, not to land a husband, but to have the fullest and most fully realized life that you can have, that's full of friends and art and music and dance and theater and whatever else floats your boat, your interests. Get out there, do it. And maybe along the way, you will bump into some guy or guys who share your interests, who would like to be on that journey with you out there in the world. But if you don't meet that guy, and some people never wind up partnered, some people wind up single for years or decades or forever, even if you never meet anybody, you will be enjoying life. And even if you do meet somebody and you get married and you have a husband, husbands can be taken from us. Husbands can drop dead. Husbands can leave us. Relationships can go south. We can decide that we want to leave them. There are no guarantees. Once you land this husband, it's not like your life is permanently awesome and solved and fixed. Once you meet that husband, then you got a husband for as long as you have that husband. And if your whole life was just built around landing that dude, then if that dude disappears on you, what do you got? You got nothing, because your whole life was built around landing the dude. So if the dude goes, what do you got? Nothing. You've got to make sure that you have a full, active, interesting, self-actualized life, dude or no dude. And you'll be a much more attractive person if you do have a full, interesting life, more attractive to those dudes. Nobody wants to have that pressure of feeling like they are someone's everything, because that makes staying feel like something they have to do rather than something they get to choose to do. So how do you embrace single life more fully? You fucking embrace single life fully. Get out there and live your fucking single life. Have fun. See if you don't meet somebody while you're out there living and embracing your single life who would like to partner with you and live that life with you. And you remind yourself right now at every step that you are just 26 fucking years old. There is no goddamned hurry. The average age of first marriage for straight people is late 20s, early 30s. And it's a little higher, I think, on average for queer people. So take a deep fucking breath. Be 26. Take your antidepressants, go see your shrink, and then get out there and live and have fun and stop flipping through Groom magazine or whatever the fuck you're flipping through. Because you know what's not attractive? Seeing someone flip through Groom magazine. Because what that says to the guys you may encounter is not that you're someone they might want to marry, but that you're just someone who wants to marry. And it's not about them. It's about that. It's about it. It's about the institution. It's about getting a blank, getting a husband, not getting that person or not being with that person. People want to be with somebody who wants to be with them. People don't want to be with somebody who wants to be married to anyone. So put the Groom magazine away, get a bike, go to the gym, go to the clubs, go have fun, go be 26. Stop thinking about your wedding day.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. This is in response to the question from episode 530, the live one, about ravishment play and how to roll it out in a non-creepy way. I think one thing you can do is talk about it in terms of fantasy and talk about it in terms of pretending, and don't lead with, I want to rape you, but not for real. That's definitely the creepiest way to roll it out. Start with things like, sometimes when I play with myself, I fantasize about pretending to have non-consensual sex with someone. And I wonder if it would be okay with you if while we were having sex, I fantasized to myself about having non-consensual sex with you. And from there to maybe we could actually pretend sometime that our sex is non-consensual, even though of course it is, but it'd be fun to pretend. And emphasize the pretending and the fantasy and stuff like that. And that sort of frames it in the terms of role-playing and fantasy and not in the terms of violence and assault. I think that may be a way to help with the creep factor.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to the woman who was dating the super controlling dude a couple episodes ago, and also in response to the people who responded to her, because I think they were a little harder on her than they intended to be, telling her to be smarter and to dump his ass. And while I do agree she should leave him, I really hope, sweetie, that you don't walk away thinking that you're a piece of shit because you're dating a piece of shit. Oxytocin is a blinding bitch, and sometimes we fall for the wrong people. So Godspeed and go find love, sweetheart.
Hi, Dan. I heard your live show this week, and I am the previous caller who's into dressing up dicks. I have to disagree with you about it not being a kink. It's not that I find it visually sexy to see a penis in a hat, but I do have to say that cock dress up is it's super sexy for a bunch of reasons. So first of all, I'm totally in charge of someone's dick in a completely unconventional way, which is most likely quite uncomfortable and new for them. And that's a really fascinating kind of power. Second, there's often the sort of humiliation aspect, especially in the sense that people have all kinds of feelings surrounding how they're reacting to it. Like if they're hard or soft, or because I'm objectifying or feminizing them in some way. And third, I would say, I guess it usually draws a big crowd at a party, and I'm a huge exhibitionist and I get to show off this art and this power, and it's really fun. And you'd be really surprised at how very, very many people are into it once you mention that you're into it. And so I would encourage everybody to try it because it's awesome. Go dress up dicks.
I take it back. I see now how cock dress up could be a kink. Most kinks are obviously about power and control, and I didn't see it at first, how this could be about power control. So thank you for calling back, cock dress up fetishist, and explaining how your kink works. And now I am on your side, and I see your kink for the legit kink that it is. All right, we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the podcast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. Hump, my amateur porn film festival 2017 edition, is coming to San Francisco in a couple of weeks, January 11th to 14th. Then Columbus, Pittsburgh, Eugene, Los Angeles, Albuquerque, Madison, Chicago, and more cities. To find out when Hump is coming to you, go to humpfilmfest.com for information and to get tickets. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow the amazing and talented and hilarious Randy Rainbow on Twitter at Randy Rainbow. And follow Gabrielle Moss on Twitter at Gabby_Moss. And be sure to read Savage Love, my weekly sex advice column, in the East Bay Express and other fine newspapers. And right after you read Savage Love, be sure to listen to Blabbermouth, the Stranger's other podcast, where Eli Sanders, Rich Smith, and I, plus weeks, discuss the news and politics and all sorts of other stuff. You can't get enough of me ranting about politics. You can listen to Blabbermouth, too. Savage Love cast is produced every week by Nancy Hertunian and me, and the tech savvy at Risk Youth, and Nancy. Back at you next week for another installment of the Savage Lovecast.